drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're talking to everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and work-at-home mom who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm living my creative life nights and weekends after I get home from my full-time job at an ad agency.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast. Tonight we're talking with Nikki Tron. Nikki is a woman who wears many hats. In the past 4 years, she's photographed more than 60 weddings alongside her husband and co-shooter, created an online store selling editing resources for photographers, and has recently decided to ditch the cozy comfort of her stay-at-home job to enter the corporate world as a self-taught web designer and developer. Besides trying to live creatively for an income, she looks for creative outlets to help keep her life and happiness balanced, including watercoloring, playing instruments, gardening, writing, reading, and spending just enough time in the kitchen. And Nikki is also my lovely cousin, so we're really excited to be chatting with you tonight, Nikki.
Thank you. I'm really excited.
Yeah, just reading your bio was like, oh yeah, you do all of those things. You're like one of the most creative people I know.
Oh my goodness. Well, I do try a little bit.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your life so far and how you got to where you are right now?
Well, I am 26 years old. I'm going to be 27 next month, and I'm married to my husband, Paul. We grew up in St. Paul, but we moved out into the country, and we absolutely love it out here. And it wasn't until we got married that I decided that I was going to start my own business. And we had planned on we were going to have kids right away after we got married. And I thought, well, what can I do as a stay-at-home mom? Because that's what I really wanted to be, was a stay-at-home mom. And I just thought, what could I do to help with income? And I don't know why it popped into our heads, but photography was the thing that came up. And I was like, okay, I'll try it. And we did. And that has opened up so many doors for me. I mean, the past 4 years have been amazing, working as my own boss and turning my house into a little bit of an office and meeting new people. But just having the photography business itself has opened up a lot of doors for me. And so if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have any of the other things I do now be a part of my life. And, you know, I wouldn't have had that drive to become my own business owner if I hadn't started 4 years ago. So as of right now, that's where I am. I'm a business owner and I work from home and I'm transitioning into other things.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you were not, like you said, you're not trained in photography. You sort of taught yourself because your bachelor's degree is in elementary education, right? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So,
off the spectrum.
So like, how did you start teaching yourself everything you needed to know about photography to start a business?
Well, when it was actually Paul's, I think it was Paul's idea that said, like, oh, why don't you just try photography? And I was like, okay. So we bought the camera, and it was just, it was like a fire, like, that went inside me, like, oh my God, I get to be my own business owner. So it was watch YouTube tutorials, read as many books as I can, research online, find photographers that I love, read about what they do, and then try to make that into my own. And it was just look what the professionals do and then try and do that. And that's what I did. And I took one editing workshop a few years ago, and that was great. I loved watching her edit. But it's just been trial and error, and I built my own website. It was everything. You just tried it, and it was, I just wanted to be what the other professionals were doing. So I just did what they did.
That is a really excellent strategy, especially for someone who is completely self-taught. I know I was a self-taught photographer as well, or am one. I guess I have not stopped being one. I'm not quite on your level, Nikki. I like to do a little bit more nature stuff, less people. Personal opinion, I guess. But I know as...
Oh, no, I love that.
Yeah. As a photographer, I know I deal with this all the time. I could almost bet that you have moments where you felt like a fraud as you tackled all of these new projects and as you became your own business owner, and especially going from like 0 to 100 in, you know, photography skill and editing and all of that kind of thing. How did you conquer that feeling while you were going through it all?
Well, to be honest, I still have that. I don't think it's ever going to go away, but I don't know what it is, but I still don't see myself as having, oh my gosh, all this talent. I have to hear from Paul or from other people, and then I'm like, okay, I guess it's okay. Like, even the piano that I played since I was 5, people still have to tell me. Otherwise, I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I'm that great. But so it was nice that other people saw that talent, and then that snowballed everything. But it's just comparing to other people is horrible, and I do it all the time. So I can't really tell you that it's gone away. I just think I like what I do. If other people don't, then that's on them. They don't book me. But as long as I like what I do, and then I can't look at other people and be like, oh, well, they're doing it so much better than me. It's just, if I'm happy, that's all I need. So it's been hard. It's still hard.
Yeah, I was just sitting there today and I ended up like having an email exchange with a client that I would consider being like somebody who kind of knows what they're doing, and they sort of admitted that they don't know what they're doing. And I was like, so really what I'm hearing is that like, no matter where you are, like in your business or in your creative life, like everybody just feels like they're completely winging it and nobody has any clue what's going on.
Oh God, no. Even after like the 60 weddings before, even we just had an engagement session yesterday. It was still like, up until going there, it was like, oh my God, I'm nervous. Oh, what if they don't like the photos? Oh my gosh, what if I freeze? I freeze during every session, and I'm like, oh, what do I want to do now? So I don't know. It just still happens. Every wedding, I'm still terrified. Even before meeting with people, I'm still nerve-wracked. And after every meeting, I ask Paul, how did I do? Did I sound okay? Should I have not said that? Is that okay? So, I mean, it's nice I have Paul to back up on, but yeah, it's nerve-wracking still.
I think it's good that you're really honest about that. I know a lot of the times we look at everyone else's like perfectly curated Instagram feeds. We're like, oh, they get it. They, you know the secret to adult life that I just don't. And then you feel like really, really bad about yourself. So I think it's really great when other creative people can be honest. So like, nope, I'm totally faking it over here. How about you?
I completely agree. Just like when I talk to Ashley about stuff, we're like, how do you set up this photo? How do we do this? Or how do you make your website look so nice and sound so nice? And it's like, well, I mean, it's what you want it to sound like and look like. And for the most part, I feel like, I don't know, it's still true. It's just, you know, you're just making it nicer for everyone else to see, but it's still pretty true.
Mm-hmm. You're smoothing out the wrinkles.
Yes, exactly.
We trade business and creativity ideas like all the time, because we're the people who like, we have that conversation. We're like, nobody else gets what I do. I have this like online business and no one understands. So we're always like talking to each other about that. And I think that's when I first realized like everybody kind of second guesses themselves, and that's okay, because I always looked at you and I was like, oh, you totally know what you're doing. You have all these clients and all these weddings, and then you're always kind of freaking out about them, even though you are really good. So,
oh, you're so nice.
I think the lesson there is that like it happens to everybody, and like even though you may never be 100% confident in your skills, you just have to keep pushing forward and doing that thing that you're passionate about, because there's never going to be a time where you feel totally ready to take something on, and you just need to make that leap anyway.
I agree.
So because wedding photography is kind of a crowded market, like it seems like everybody is sort of into photography, and wedding photography in particular is a very popular option for business owners. So as you're like looking at all of these other professionals to sort of figure out how to structure your business and how to get started, how did you find your own individual style and start differentiating from the other photographers instead of just following the crowd or getting stuck in comparison mode?
Well, this is going to be another honest answer, and I don't think it took until probably last year was the first year I looked at my photos and I was like, oh, I still like that photo, or I still like the way I'm editing. And I mean, even now looking at like from like last just August, I'm like, ugh, I would have done that differently, or ugh, I don't like that editing. But with so many people starting photography and Pinterest being what it is with photography, which I think is killing it, to be honest, is just like, you have everyone doing the same poses over and over, and it's all the ones that they find on Pinterest, or, you know, brides wanting you to reenact this wedding or that wedding, and they want you to just do the same stuff over and over. And I think what helped me was, like I said before, like looking at other professionals and doing what they do. And I don't know where I read this quote, but it's like copy, copy, copy until it becomes your own. And that might sound bad, but it's true. It's like I would copy poses, and then I would, like, you know, go through them and be like, oh, okay, I don't like that photo. I like this pose because, you know, it looks like this. Or the editing style. I would go from trying to use like all these different color hues or the hazes, and it just didn't look like me. And so I actually would keep, I've actually told other photographers to do this too, is I keep a folder of your favorite photos that just, like, when you look at them, you're like, oh my gosh, I love that photo, and keep them in a folder. And then after like a few months or whatever, look at it and be like, oh, I see a pattern. You know, I started to notice I really like the bold colors. I like the sun and like the sunset, and I like how to get that dreamy light. Or I like this romantic pose, or I don't like that one. So it's nice if you can look back, like make a Pinterest board basically of your own work, and then go back and see a pattern and see how that helps. But yeah, I hope I didn't veer off the question too much. But I guess, yeah, with all those photographers, it's so easy to just blend in and be the same thing, because you look at them and you're like, God, they look like they're doing so well. Maybe I should do what they're doing. And it just doesn't work. If you don't like what you're doing, it's not going to work.
That's a really good point. And like, why on earth would you become your own boss and a business owner if you're just going to continue doing things for 8, 9, 10 hours a day that you don't enjoy doing?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, and I love that idea of even like saving your best work. Like, that's something, it obviously works really well for anybody in a visual industry, but even for writing, I think that could work. Like, if you save like your favorite short stories or your favorite paragraphs or your favorite ideas even, and just sort of connect the dots and see like, where is this taking me? I think that's a really good strategy, because so often we creatives just sort of like bounce around and we're like, I don't really know, like, who I am as a writer, photographer, whatever. And it's like, you can figure it out. You just have to put in the work.
Oh, exactly. I agree. And it just helps to like, just look back on stuff. Like, even like, I think you're the one that wrote about like the keeping the diary. And that was like maybe like a year or two ago. And after you wrote that, I'm like, God, I have to keep a diary again. And so I would write down, you know, obviously. And then now going back, I look at it and just see, it's like just getting the broader picture of seeing who you really are and what you really want to do as a creative. Like, the things I said I wanted to do years ago that I don't really remember saying, I'm doing now. And so it's just, it's nice to actually look back and see the big picture.
Mm-hmm. So you said that you don't really like Pinterest just because it sort of leads to all of that sameness in your industry. So where do you find inspiration for poses and for different photography styles and things, if you... Or like, how do you steer brides away from becoming too attached to Pinterest? Because I bet that's a problem for a lot of wedding photographers.
Well, I think it was maybe two seasons ago, I had to put it in my contract, I don't use Pinterest poses, because it was just, I spent almost the entire wedding portrait time trying to get the poses that they wanted from Pinterest that I wouldn't normally do. And so they didn't get any photos that I would consider good. And I don't think they really cared too much for them, because it wasn't, you know, natural and whatever. And so the poses I actually have found, I follow certain photographers that I love their look, I love their style, but it's still not theirs that I'm doing. It's still my own, but I'm kind of taking a little bit away from them. But then, I know this might sound corny, but I think of sometimes like stuff that like Paul does, or like Help Me and Paul Stand sometimes. Or like, I know this is weird, but like if I'm in the kitchen washing dishes and Paul comes up behind me and gives me a hug, I'll actually say that like when I'm posing people, like, okay, she's at the kitchen counter, she's, you know, washing dishes, go give her a big hug. And so I use real life stuff, and like, also like movies, I look at like movie posters and I see the poses they do because they're so romantic. And so I use, yeah, some of those too, like Nicholas Sparks, he's good.
That's hilarious. I love that, you know, you know, hug her like she's washing the dishes kind of thing. Because I imagine not only does it, like, feel natural, like, doing that pose, like, it's something that someone can actually, instead of, like, lower your left hand 3 inches, tip your chin towards the sun. I mean, those ridiculous things that you sometimes hear photographers say. So not only is it, like, actually giving them direction they can understand, but also I imagine putting a smile on their face, like an actual, genuine, not fake smile for that photo.
Yes, and that is what I love. And I don't know. Those are my favorite ones. Like when I said I go in the folder and I pick my favorite ones, it's those ones that are genuine or they're just so romantic or they're not the ones that I have taken from other photographers. They're my own ones that I kind of generate, I guess.
Yeah, that's super important to come up with your own style, like you said. And I think that probably even helps you not feel like as much of a fraud, or I guess any creative to not feel as much of a fraud, like you're doing your actual own thing and you're not just copying someone else and hoping that it works this time.
Yes, because that's actually really scary. Like when like you see, like if I do some pose that another photographer does, even though it's not like, oh, they're trademark and like they have a patent on it, I'm still terrified that people are going to think, oh, well, she's just trying to copy there. And there's where the doubt comes in again, because I still always worry about stuff like that. Or I actually just had a photographer I mentored maybe a couple months ago, but she asked me about like the poses and stuff like that. And I said, you know what? If you see a photographer that you like their style, just copy, copy, copy. And then you'll start to see your own style kind of just like seeping in there. And mm-hmm. Everyone copies. No one like makes up this pose. I mean, they're just there.
I was going to say, like, humans have been standing for centuries. Like, yes. You have to copy somebody. Yes.
So. Yeah, I was just going to connect it back to writing, because that's, like, the filter through which I view all of these conversations is, like, even when you're in college as an English major, your professors hand you, like, a poem or a short story, and they're like, okay, like, basically copy it. I mean, but, like, I can't remember what they called it. There's, like, a name for this exercise. Did you ever do that in school, Abby?
I don't think I did.
Okay. It was like you basically copied it, but you didn't. It was like, there's totally a name for this and I'm blanking on it. I'm going to have to do some Googling later and see if I can find what it is. But it's like, you basically like follow their form and follow, like, if they use short sentences, you try using short sentences, even if you don't normally. And you try doing dialogue this way, and you just sort of copy their style and see if any of it feels right to you. And it's just sort of a way to expand your own horizons. And like you were saying, Nikki, it sort of brings out what really is your true style and like what really works best for you as a creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And like as I get older, like I'm even finding like my own style, like in my house decor or even like painting. Like I thought I would start painting because I also watercolor, like you said. even like when I started doing that, I would try and copy other people, but it was like, ugh, it just didn't feel like me. And then when I started painting things, that it was like oozed me. I loved it.
Yeah, and I do love your watercolors. So, like, in addition to, like, photography, like you said, you do watercolors, you play piano, you do all this other stuff. Like, you garden, you're always cooking and stuff. You, like, you do, like, everything. But, so, you work from home all day. You don't have a 9-to-5 job right now, and you don't have any kids. And as someone who was in that position a couple years ago, I know that that sounds, like, perfectly ideal, but it can actually turn into, like, 60 or 70-hour work weeks because there are no built-in boundaries on your time. So you sort of just keep working, and you just keep tweaking that project or working on your website or marketing for new clients, and you just never really stop. So how do you keep your business from taking up all your free time so that you can make time for all that other creative stuff you do?
Well, I don't think today's a good example, because as soon as we're done with this, I'm going to be blogging and posting photos of an engagement session. But it's really, honestly, really, really hard, and it's draining. And I know we've talked about it so many times, like how me and Ashley actually would text each other, what, 3 days we lasted? Like, yeah, make sure you're done work at 4:00. Like, are you done? I'm done. It didn't last very long. But
no, we kind of failed. But it was a good thought.
It was. But, like, it's happened so many times. Like, even, like, at family gatherings, like, I'm on my computer working, and it's just so frustrating. So I think It's just when I have like a wedding or an engagement session, I'm really bad at putting the boundaries on. I will work until it's done just because I want to get it done. And I know that that's a big selling point for my brides and grooms is my turnaround time is 4 to 5 days that they'll get all their wedding photos back. So when I have that, I don't really have boundaries. Unless it's like a really nice day out and Paul says, hey, let's have a bonfire. And I'm like, okay, at 9 o'clock at night, let's go outside because that's when I finish work. But otherwise, when I'm working, I'll actually leave work and I'll write in my diary for a little bit. Or if I just, I feel like almost like claustrophobic, not in my house, but just in life, I'll have to like go bake something or go literally make something just to keep me grounded and not so into my computer or into my screens or whatever the heck I'm doing, because it's, you have to do something or you have to leave the house and yeah, go buy a plant. Or another thing I love to do, and if I'm talking too fast, just tell me. but like in the summer or spring, I remember writing in my diary and I would read it over just to see how crazy busy I would be some wedding season. And I would actually leave work and go outside and just sit there and just like listen. And it'd be like at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, the sun's almost down, but I would just have to sit there and just breathe. And then I'd have to go back in and get back to the hustle and bustle. But it's just, I think it just varies with other people. Like, I mean, Ashley, you have Hadley, so you, mm-hmm. you know, you have a good excuse to be done with work, which yeah. I wish, I mean, it's seriously, because Paul right now is working on his own thing. So he's upstairs working. I'm down here where it's like, well, if Paul's working, I should be working. Yeah. So it's just, it's hard with him. He's the one that makes it like, oh, Paul's working, I should be working.
Yeah, because Paul has a regular 9-to-5 job, but he works from home in addition to that sometimes, or like he comes home early and then wraps up his work at home, right?
Yes, he's actually working on his own business type of thing, like his own software that he's trying to create his own business too. It's very at the beginning process, but so he will come home from his 9-to-5 job and then he'll start working. He doesn't take breaks. He's not like me where he needs a break. He'll just keep going. So when he does that, that's when I'm like, okay, I'll get more hours in, but I think it just depends on the person, the day. I can maybe go 5 days working horrible shifts, and then I might take 3-4 days off and be like, you know what, I'm drained. So It really depends. And now that I've moved my office in the basement where my piano is, my watercolors are, everything is, it's easier for me to now take a break and be like, you know what, I'm going to turn around. I'm going to go paint right there because I can't.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to like get up and walk up the stairs anymore, right? You just turn around.
I know. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
A previous guest of the podcast mentioned like make creativity easy for yourself. And I thought that was really good advice. I mean, just sit down and, you know, think through like what are the things that I can do to make being a creative person just really, really easy to not say no to. So like, yeah, having your piano behind you, so you like literally twist your chair, that's pretty darn easy. I don't know if it gets much easier.
It's true. It's just, I think it's really hard being a creative and then, cause you always like have to find, I mean, my income is not steady. It's honestly not the greatest thing to have right now. So it's like, I try to keep thinking, oh, what's another way I can make money? Me and Ashley always have these talks like, oh, what's another thing I can do to be, you know, bring in an income? And it's like, I want my creative stuff to stay creative unless like it magically easily happens to make money or like, you know what I mean? Instead of forcing everything creative that I do to make income. I don't know if a lot of creatives deal with that, but I know that's something I deal with all the time. It's like, okay, I'm doing this. How can I make money off of this? Or how can I branch this out and, you know, bring in some income? So it's tough.
Yeah, we talk about that with a lot of people actually who feel like, oh, if this creative endeavor doesn't make money, it's not worth doing. Or if this journal entry is just for me and I'm not going to publish it on my blog, is it really worth writing? Because I don't have anything to show for that time I spent. But you can't look at your creativity like that. Like you have to just look at it as like, do I want to do this? Okay, then go ahead and do it. And if it makes money, that's like a bonus, but it doesn't have to.
Yeah, that's really hard to like put a border up between that. It's really hard for me, at least. I don't know. I always feel like I'm not doing enough if I'm not bringing in enough income. It's not too fun.
No, completely understand. I know Ashley and I have talked about this before too. Like, what is it that you do that is creative that you may never make money from? And that's one of those things, like, I've often asked myself, like, I've been blogging for several years now and I don't make money blogging. Like, I literally have made $2 in 2 years. So I've paid way more out the nose in like hosting costs and all of that kind of thing. But I'd still do it if I knew that was going to be the reality. And I think that is what helps me just show up every day, even though there's no dollars attached to it.
No, I totally agree. That's so helpful. Like, if I, that's like photography, I didn't start it off as like a passion that I wanted to turn into a business. It was just, hey, here's a business idea. So that helped that going. But like, if I like watercoloring, if I didn't make any money off of that, that is completely fine. I just get lost. I'll just start painting and I'll be lost in that world for a little bit. And that's what I want. That's why I think it's just hard sometimes to be a creative, because you have to, there's always like in the back of your mind that income part, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm going to use that to kind of segue into like your big announcement that we mentioned. We mentioned this a little bit at the beginning, and you haven't announced it yet, but by the time this episode airs, you might have. So you are leaving your successful photography business to pursue a regular full-time job in web development and web design, which is the complete opposite of what everybody else in the universe is doing right now. Everybody else is like, how can I get out of my 9-to-5 so I can pursue my creative thing, like working from home, freelance, whatever. So like, walk us through that whole decision process. Like, how did you decide to do that? And is that what's going to be best for like your work-life balance and your creativity and all that?
Well, I think it's been coming for a while. Like I said, photography wasn't my passion. It wasn't like I walked around my whole life with a camera and now I'm finally able to make it a living. Cause I know I've read photographers that are like that and it's like, God, I wish I was like that, but it's not. I love the people that I've met, and I love the actual idea of when I get home and I see the photo I take, it's like, oh, I love that. But it was about maybe like a month and a half ago that Paul just looked at me and he's like, I'm drained. I can't do it anymore. You know, you might have to start getting a co-shooter for this. And it was like, oh, there it goes. Like, if I can't have Paul with me, I know this is probably stupid, but if I can't have Paul with me, it's not fun. Like, it's just, it's fun because I got to work with Paul and that was what I wanted, and I got to work at home, which is what I loved. But like I said before, if it's not steady income, I get stressed and I'm worrying all the time. I mean, half the time I couldn't sleep because I'd say, well, I only have 3 weddings booked for the next year, what am I gonna do? And so, and for our plans, mine and Paul's big dreams that we have, like I said, we don't have kids, we're not planning on having kids, and so we have a lot of other big dreams that we want to do, and he wants to start his own company, which I'm completely for. I think it's great. I've had the opportunity to do this for 4 years, but I think now it's his time, because I mean, why not? Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of, everything just kind of fell into place. Like, you know what, I'm glad you said you're burnt out, because I think it's time. And so I just started to think, like, what is a job that is in high demand, or at least high enough demand? Because right now, that's the funny thing too, is I would never go for elementary education now. I'm completely different than I was at the age of 22, and that's only 4 years. So yeah. I'm completely different. It's so funny. So I would never go for elementary education. I love the kids. It's just not my calling or passion anymore. So I just thought, okay, forget the passion. Let's just think, what can I make money with? What can be consistent at least for the next however many years that we can get Paul's job going on the ball and he can get his own business going? And then maybe sometime I can come back and make my own business again, or, you know, I can kind of come back. It's just, I need a nice safe net right now. And it's nice to have my own safety, because I mean, I know I have Paul, but if I didn't have Paul, what would I do? So I want my own safety. And so I thought of web developing, web design, because I absolutely loved designing my websites. I could spend hours and hours and hours designing it. It's just, I absolutely love the design aspect, and I love decorating. I mean, I love everything about design. So I picked that, and then I figured, well, instead of someone having to hire a web designer and then a web developer, why don't they just hire me and I can do both? So I'm learning how to do web developing, and I actually really enjoy it. I like the whole I like that it doesn't hurt my brain, but it definitely, it tries my brain a little bit more. So I'm not just, you know, taking a camera and taking photos, which, I mean, it's hard. It's just not, I want it more challenging. So web developing and web design is something I'm working on now. And I hope soon that I'll be able to get a full-time job with that. And then hopefully financially, whenever it's available, then Paul can kind of cut back on his and be able to actually start what he wants to do. So we're kind of tag teaming now. And then I still have my other business, which I sell Photoshop actions for photographers. So that doesn't need to take me 8 hours a day to work on. I mean, I can do that in my free time. And then, you know, if it works out, it works out. And if not, at least I have something to fall back on. So I'm excited.
Well, congratulations on making that decision. I know it's a really tough one, and I think it's tough on both sides. If you're working full time and you want to go, you know, be your own boss, like there's a lot of decision making that goes into that process and a lot of agonizing and a lot of sleepless nights. And then vice versa, I mean, you're kind of breaking the mold with going backwards and quitting your creative full time gig for something, like you said, more stable, more 9 to 5. And I think it takes a lot of guts and, you know, decision-making skills to do the opposite as well and kind of swim against the stream. So congratulations and kudos to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was kind of scary when I first decided to do it because I've turned down a lot of brides. I'm telling my brides one by one what I'm doing. And it's just like when I first decided and I was talking to Paul about it, I'm like, oh my God, did I just fail? Like 4 years, I have nothing to show now. Like what did I just do? So at first it was heartbreaking and I just couldn't get over the fact that I'm not going to be my own boss anymore. And now I have to like go back to school. I mean, not actual school, but I have to go meet people and like bring a lunch or whatever people do at work. Like I have to see people every day now, so it's gonna be different and I'm actually really nervous, but I'm kind of hoping that in the background I can kind of do my own web design. And I know we just talked about not using all your creative juices to make money, but I would love to do something with like my watercolors. If it's like, I love design, so if I could do like logos or branding with my watercolors or something like that, that'd be something that I would also want to work on the side just for fun. And if that ends up turning into a business, great. If not, I still love doing it. So that's what's happening.
Yeah. And I think that going back to like a regular 9 to 5 with a steady paycheck has a lot of benefits from that income side of things. Like we were saying, sometimes I think creatives feel so much pressure to make money off of everything because we've got this ideal in our heads that if you're a successful artist or if you're a real creative, you're doing that as your job. And that's not necessarily true. So it can be just as successful or more successful if you have like this steady paycheck that you rely on that is like keeping you alive and keeping your household running the way it needs to run and not totally draining all of your creative energy so that you can come home later and work on the things that you really care about. And then it goes back to if your watercolors do make you money, like that's like a bonus, but it's not something that you need to have all this pressure on, because sometimes that pressure just takes all the fun out of it and you're like, what's the point now?
Oh my gosh, seriously, that's exactly what I was telling Paul, and I know I keep saying his name, but that's who I got to talk to around here. But I keep telling Paul, I'm like, I can now come home and I'll be like, oh, I can't wait to paint, or I can't wait to play the piano, or he just bought me a violin, I can't wait to practice it. Like, because now it's like, God, all day I love it. I still love doing the photography. It's just, I'm drained. And the stuff I really want to do just for fun, I don't get to do. And the photography that I want to do just for fun, I mean, I'm not going to stop doing photography after this. I'll still do, like, I love doing the styled shoots that I've done, like where it's, you know, like an old romantic bridal session, or I did a Christmas bridal session once. I love those. So I'm going to keep doing those. And the one thing I really love to do, or I used to do, was I love nature photography. So I used to go out like at 2 a.m. and take photos of the stars because it was 2 a.m. and they're really bright at that time. But my gosh, I have not done that in so long. And it's so, I'm really looking forward to being able to just have the 9 to 5 job, leave it there, and then come home and work on the stuff I really, really want to do. And I think that's just going to make it all better, knowing that I have a steady income and I also get to, you know, be creative at home just for fun. And I get to actually enjoy it instead of, like you said, just trying to make money off of it and getting drained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually one of the questions we had for you later in our interview was, we couldn't imagine that, you know, you're giving up your photography business. We can't imagine that you're just going to abandon photography altogether. I mean, I think it would be like losing a limb if I just didn't have a camera anymore. It would be like really, really a weird reality. So, you know, like you said, you're going to imagine it as part of your life still, you know, getting up at 2 a.m. and taking pictures of the stars if you can, or, you know, pictures of your Saturday mornings and things like that. That's really good to hear that you're not just going to walk away from it entirely.
No, I don't think I could. I mean, like I said, it's not like a dying passion of mine or whatever, but it's still like when we see my family, I like to have the camera now. And sometimes I actually wish I didn't know how to take photos, because it was so much easier just having the point and shoot and not having to bring them on the computer and be like, I have to edit these before I post these anywhere. But I am going to still do that. And we're going to Jamaica this October. So I'm really excited to take my camera for stuff like that, like our traveling and mine and Paul's life together. I really like documenting that kind of stuff. So, and I have the blog, and even before making the decision to kind of quit, I would hate blogging because it would be, is this blog going to make people want to book me? Like, if I blog about this, does this photo look good enough? So I can actually do blogging without worrying if anyone's even going to read it. That might sound bad, but it's true. I mean, I want to write it for myself and then, you know, hopefully other people that relate with me. But if people don't book me for it, I'm not going to, you know, lose sleep over it anymore.
Yeah, your blog won't have a job to do anymore, and I imagine that's kind of freeing. You can be a little more, you know, loose with your time or loose with your subject matter and really enjoy it.
Very much so. I've always wanted to make it like a lifestyle blog where I can share recipes, I can share gardening, and I would always read like on other photography forums, like photographers would say, oh, don't have your personal stuff like mixed in with your professional stuff. That just gets too confusing. And I'm like, well, I'm not that type of person. I need it all to mix. So it is very freeing now. I actually get to do what I really, really want and not have to worry about, you know, if I'll get business for it.
Yeah, and that's something that we talk about this all the time. Like, well, we used to. We don't so much anymore, but about, like, the personal versus the professional on your blog, because that's where I was always like, I don't know if this is, like, okay to post on my blog. And now I'm like, I had to make a really clear-cut decision about my blog because, like, I don't have time for it to do so many things, because writing one blog post is, like, all I can handle a week. So I need my blog to have a job right now. And maybe someday I won't. Like, maybe someday I'll have a blog that doesn't need to have a job, but right now this one does. So I had to make that really clear-cut decision. Like, I am going to blog about content strategy and creativity, and that's pretty much it. And it's been easier for me since I drew those lines, because now I don't have decision fatigue about, like, I kind of feel like writing this thing. Should that go on the blog, or does that not really belong there? Like, it's been freeing for me to have that boundary. And then how I've decided to share, like, the more personal stuff is, I'm going to start pitching, like, personal essays to other publications where that stuff belongs a little bit better. Yay! Than with my blog. Yeah. So, because, I mean, I've wanted to do that anyway. So I'm like, well, why don't I just take the stuff that's on my blog that doesn't really belong there and put it somewhere where it does belong, on other publications. And if it gets rejected or doesn't get in, that's okay. Like, at least I wrote it.
Good for you.
So it's sort of that. Yeah. Thank you. So it's sort of that same thing of, like, setting your boundaries and taking the pressure off. And if you need your blog to have a job, it can have one. But if it doesn't need one, then that's awesome. Like, if you can have that freeing feeling to just post whatever you want to post and not have to worry about it. Like, that must be so nice to have no pressure there.
Yes, I'm quite excited about it.
I was going to say, I'm right in the middle of both of you guys right now. I have just the one blog that I've kind of blogged a little bit about photography and a little bit about writing and a little bit about goal setting and all of those kinds of things. And I keep thinking, like, should I split all of my, like, personal stuff off and do a different blog for all my personal stuff? And should I just only write about business, kind of like what you're doing, Ashley, on this blog? And, like, what's the best strategy? And I've been mulling it over for months and months, and I just can't make a decision. So I just keep doing what I'm doing, whether or not it's working. So probably time to, you know, rethink that whole life strategy, but I'm letting it go for now.
Yeah, I enjoy your blog. I've been reading it, so, you know.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And, like, I've heard from, like, other, like, my brides and grooms, like, if it is for photography, like, they love getting to know the photographer behind you know, behind the camera. So like I've actually had like people come up to me at weddings that weren't my bride and groom, and they're like, oh, how's Rusty? Or how's Paul? Is that Paul over there? And I'm like, ah, I don't know you, but all right.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine it's less awkward too for the bride and groom to know a little bit more about you and like what you like and what you don't like and what your voice is and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that when you're spending hours and hours with them on the most important day of their lives, they kind of like feel like you're not a stranger.
Exactly. I actually had one bride. I just love her. She came to our meeting and she had a bunch of my photos saved on her phone. And it wasn't like my wedding photos. It was my nephews, Rusty, like aww, all these people that are all these like things that I do. And she's talking to me about tea and because I love to drink tea. And it was like I already knew her when I first met her. So it's, I mean, I like that part of it, like where my brides feel like they know me. One of my brides got me like a tea gift because she knew how much I loved it before I even met her. So it is nice. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to mix personal and business. And I always tell Ashley that she should do that. But now that she's going to do the personal essays, and you're on Instagram too. And I love your Instagram account. I love that.
Oh, my Instagram is like a sad little failure of a social media account. Like,
no, it's not. I love it.
You're getting the hang of it. You've only been doing it, what, like 3-4 months?
Yeah, I think I started it in like November or something like that. And then like when I took off for Christmas, that like month and a half, I was like, I'm not Instagramming. Like, I don't need to be there.
Well, you put such good detailed captions instead of like the one-liners that people do. You're like, oh, this is a deep picture. And there's so much more meaning to my feet in the photo. And it's like, oh, I love that. It's true.
Yeah, I know Instagram's kind of become like a little mini blogging platform, and I think you're taking really good advantage of it. I think you're sharing a little more personal stuff on Instagram than maybe you are on the blog, and that's a good blend. I like it too.
That's sort of the tack I've been taking with it, because I was like, I don't know what to say about these Instagram captions that are like if I take the pictures that everybody else is taking, you know, like here's my coffee on my desk or my feet or whatever, like because I've done the feet picture like twice now and it always feels dumb, but that's okay. It's like I need to find something to say about this. And I always used to joke on my blog when I did write more personal stuff, I was like the queen of awkward metaphors, because I would find the strangest things and connect them to like, I don't know, like philosophical thoughts.
I love those.
Yeah, I would just like I would just connect like random things because that's how I think, I guess. And so now I'm like, Instagram can be an all right place to put that stuff, and then it doesn't necessarily have to be on the blog where I feel all this like pressure to post like 3 times a week because I'm only posting once about business and once about personal and once about creativity. And now I'm just freed up to post once a week, which is really all I have time for. So it works.
Yeah, that's a good strategy. You're making it work.
Yeah. So speaking of social media, you, Nikki, have made a pretty big like strides in your business because of Facebook. And that's not one of the social medias we talk about very often. Usually people want to talk about Pinterest or Instagram or Twitter. So even though you won't really be having your business for that much longer, would you want to talk a little bit about how Facebook impacted your business and how you sort of set boundaries there and kept yourself from getting sucked into the news feed every time you went to market yourself?
Okay, another honest answer. I always get sucked in. It's a problem. But I love Facebook for like advertising. I've never paid for advertising outside of Facebook, and I didn't even start doing advertising on Facebook until maybe like a year and a half ago when it was like crunch time where I needed to book more weddings and I had to, you know, have more meetings. And so I love Facebook for that reason. And I'm actually going to, I have 2 Facebook pages, which is kind of confusing for myself. But one is for the Photoshop actions and then one is for my wedding photography and my blogging. So eventually I'm planning on merging the 2 into 1, and you know, I hope people stay on for the ride, but I'm probably going to lose a few followers and that's fine. But Facebook was just amazing in the beginning because it was, you know, you tag someone in a photo and then that friend sees that friend liked it. And then that friend sees that friend liked it. And it was just like, it snowballed. And within posting like my first session in March, I had 12 weddings booked within like 3 months. So Facebook is huge. And I know some photographers say, like, they don't ever pay for advertising. They don't believe in that. But their algorithms on Facebook have diminished your reach so much in the last, since I started. I mean, dramatically in the last, for sure, 2 years. So even if I pay, like, I always pay. Every time I post a photo, I'll pay $5. If it's a really good wedding that I really want a lot of people to see, I'll put $10 or $15 on it. I don't care, because you have to invest to make money. So that's my thinking on the Facebook advertising type of stuff. You still have to invest. You can't just, you know, hope for a prayer that 100 people see it. I mean, if you can pay, you can get like 10,000 people to see it, which is usually what my average is. And so that's great. But yeah, so I think Facebook is huge for at least what I do, just because if I can't tag people in photos, it's like, it's very rare that it'll get the reach that I really want people to see, unless I have an already big following on my Facebook page. So, like, I mean, like, Ashley, if you posted your blog post, I mean, there's no one you can tag in it. Right. Like, right. So when I even, yeah, like, post, like, a blog post on there, it's like, okay, I have to find a photo that will go with it, and then I have to tag myself in it, so at least other people will see it, that it's actually on the page. So, but I do, Facebook is my biggest investment for advertising, for sure. And I'm still going to plan on using that for my actions. I still use it. Like, if I'm having a sale on my actions, I'll advertise and it'll get shared. And so I think that one's really great for advertising. Pinterest I use just for fun. I don't care if people follow me on Pinterest. And I love Pinterest. I know I said it kills. It kills wedding photography and all other types of photography. But decor and everything? No, I love it. Instagram I've been using, just I use it like a blog. Like, I'm just like, I hope, I used to use it like how, well, if I post this photo, will people book me because this looks really pretty? And now I'm like, I don't care. This is what Rusty looks like right now. He's so cute. Look at his photo. So I don't know. Facebook is huge though. And I think photographers take advantage of it, but I don't think they do enough. And I think you really have to, like, I can't post. I was talking to Ashley about this. We talk about all this kind of stuff. But so I don't post photos or blog posts before like 9 p.m. because people don't see them. For some reason, my audience, they log in past like 9 o'clock. So I get like the late night birds. And I'll get people going to my blog super regularly, like on a weeknight, not during the day. I hardly get anyone during the day if I post a photo in the morning. No one ever goes. It's nighttime when I start to get people. So I think if people actually like use StatCounter, like what we use, or Google Analytics or whatever, just to at least see what's actually coming in and through what website, I think photographers should really take advantage of that, because I think they're kind of like, oh, I don't want to pay for advertising, but I'd use it. It's pretty good. Just saying.
Another honest answer.
Yeah, well, but if you think about paying like $5 to boost a post or a photo or whatever, like, that's not bad. And I've managed Facebook social media for another company before, and like you said, the algorithm changes just hit you so hard if you aren't willing to pay. That I think that's why so many people aren't on Facebook, is because they're like, well, it's not free. Like, they don't show my photos to anybody, so what's the point of even being there? But if you are willing to pay, I think people forget that if you have like a couple bucks to like put towards boosting a particular post or a particular photo, like, that could be a worthwhile investment for you, depending on what your industry is.
Oh, exactly. Like, we decided to spend so much money on an actual photography forum where literally the people looking at it were photographers. And I have seen almost nothing come from that in the past 6 months. I would have seen such a huge increase in sales if I would have taken that money and put it into Facebook. It's so huge what they can do. And you can pick specifically who they can advertise to, like the demographic of each person. I love it. So I think it's worthwhile. And if you think about like $5 a day times 30 days, $150 a month on advertising, that's really not too bad, depending on, like, for photography, that's like nothing if you think of the money for a wedding. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, if you get one wedding that month, you've more than paid for your advertising cost. And if you get more than one wedding at that point, then you're just like rolling in the dough.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
And I echo that even from a like social media management perspective. I know I work at an ad agency full time, and we probably manage, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 Facebook pages for different clients on a daily basis. And like, we have one page that has almost 500,000 followers and likes on that page.
Oh my.
And still, if we don't put money behind something, you might get 500 views. Like, the yep. algorithms mm-hmm. are so stacked against you that Facebook is definitely like pay to play. And luckily, it's still cheap. So like you said, even if you advertise every single day for a full month, you're paying mm-hmm. $150, but you get to see, or you get to choose who sees that. You get to choose the age range and the interests and all of that kind of thing of those people, rather than spending $10,000 on a magazine placement and hoping the right people see it.
Exactly. Like, I've been published in The Knot, and I've never, ever, 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 ever got an email from someone saying, hey, I saw you in The Knot. It's like, hey, a friend of a friend of a friend liked your photo on Facebook. That's how I saw you. Everybody, almost like 90% of the people I've gotten are all from Facebook. So it really does pay, and I'm a huge supporter of it, so I would do it if you're thinking about it.
Yeah, I think that's good advice for other creatives who might be mm-hmm. interested in finding places to advertise. So now you know, people, like, Facebook is worth your time, but you probably have to put a little bit of money behind it.
Yes, exactly.
So at the end of all of our episodes, we do a little mini book club, which should be fun because you like to read.
I love to read.
We all like to read. So do you want to tell us about either, you can talk about pretty much anything, either what you're reading right now or books that encourage your creativity or like your favorite books of all time, which I know you have a lot of, so maybe not those.
Or even like a book that you are just reading right now to completely decompress. Like, it has no business advice for you. It's not about photography. It's not about marketing. Like, something you're just reading for fun.
It's okay. I love books. Well, I honestly can say I've only read a few books, just like a few on photography. And that was years ago when I first started. So I don't really read business books. I don't really think they're fun to read for myself because I don't get lost in them, like, oh, dream world. And I don't really want to dream about my business when I go to sleep because I usually read right before bed. So my books that I read are like classic children's lit. I love like Mary Poppins, and I love Narnia and Harry Potter and Laura Ingalls. So those are my go-to right now. Actually, Mary Poppins Opens the Door, the third book, is on my nightstand right now, and I'm about to cry because it's almost done, and I hate when her books are done. So I don't know what it is. I love the whole like kiddish wonder in everything. I love that kind of stuff. So I'll read any old children's books. I just found one. My mom is a librarian, and so she had a book fair, and I went there and I judged every book by its cover, and I picked out one that had a really good cover, and it was so good. And it felt like an old book, like an old 1920s English author type of book, and I loved it. And that one was called The Doldrums. So if you need a kid's book for Hadley or anybody else, that's a good one.
All right. Good to know. I'll keep that one in mind.
Otherwise, I would say my biggest creativity type of inspiration book is, well, books are, Susan Branch is my absolute favorite author in the whole wide world. And she handwrites all of her books, every single page, and she illustrates her books with all of her own watercolors, and she uses quotes, and she has recipes in her books, and they're all like from her diaries or just like a memoir type of book. And she's just wonderful. You read her books or her blog, which she has up, and you just get lost in her world for like 5 minutes, and it's like, oh, everything's right in the world, nothing bad is happening. So I love those types of books that like take me away, and I don't have to worry about everyday people, everyday worlds.
Yeah, you're an escapist reader.
I am. That's, oh yeah, we had to take that quiz.
That's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah. So what about you, Ashley? Do you have any like escapist books that you can just guarantee are going to like give you an awesome afternoon whenever you pick them up?
I read pretty much very widely. Like, I read nonfiction and I read some escapist stuff, but like we've talked about before, like, I do like books where people die at the end, which is not great escapist literature. So I know my go-to like comfort food books are probably Harry Potter, which like people die, so it's okay.
It's okay.
And yeah, and then gosh, I'm trying to think if I have any other like escapist books that I go to really regularly. I think The Night Circus by Erin Morgenstern is really good for that.
I still need to read that. That's on my list.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, it's fabulous, Nikki. Read it, okay. Read it now.
I've been bothering her about it for like a year and she has not read it. And then the book I'm reading right now that I'm going to mention, because I know you'll like it, Nikki, I haven't told you about it yet, is called Four Seasons in Rome.
Ooh.
By, I don't know how to pronounce his name, and I should because he's so famous, but it's Anthony Doerr or Doerr?
I think it's Doerr.
Doerr? Okay.
I think.
He's the guy who wrote All the Light We Cannot See, which I have not read, but the rest of the world has, and it's like completely fantastic.
It's fabulous.
Oh my gosh, I think I'm too old. Amazing. I never know like new books. I'm always like, oh, where's Jane Austen or Beatrix Potter?
Yeah.
Hey, that's also acceptable.
Well, and I always know about the new books. I'm just like, oh, everybody else likes it. I'm not going to read it. I'm like, I'm not like a book snob. I'm just like, I'll read it 5 years after the rest of the world because the library hold line is really long. So,
so you're like the opposite of hipster.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. I'm definitely a laggard when it comes to adapting new technology and new books. Mm-hmm. So Anthony Doerr wrote All the Light I Cannot See. But before that, he wrote this book called Four Seasons in Rome that was about he got this like the setting is just so perfect. He and his wife had twins and then he came home that day from the hospital and found a letter saying that he had won this grant to work for a year in Rome and they would pay for him and his whole family to go over there and he could just write for a year and they would pay him to live there and to do that. And he hadn't even applied for it. Someone had nominated him. So how fantastic is that? So it's about
I now hate him. Come on.
Yeah, right? So it's this book about his year in Rome and working on this book, which it turns out was All the Light We Cannot See. That's the book he was writing while he was in Rome.
Oh, cool.
No.
And like I first heard about this book, I should mention, from Anne Bogle's podcast, What Should I Read Next? And I was like, oh, I haven't read the famous book, but I'll start with the really obscure nonfiction one. But I just think it's really good. Like his writing, which I'm sure holds true in his fiction as well, is so, so good. Like, it's one of those books where you just want to stop after every sentence and like soak it in and underline it. And I'm like, aww. I can't underline it because every single page would be all marked up. So yes. It's really good. And his descriptions of Rome really reflected how I felt when I was there a couple years ago because we weren't there nearly as long as he was. We were there for like 4 days, but it was like, like you expect to be so wowed by
like romantic
a place like Rome. Yeah. And we were jet lagged and it was this like shell shock experience. Like, oh, everything's old, but it's kind of dirty. And like, it's not well kept up, even though there are these like really historic buildings and things. And particularly at the beginning of the book, when they first arrived in Rome, it was like, oh, I'm not the only person who feels that way when they first get there. And so he just sort of talks about like his life for that year in Rome and writing his book. And I'm not quite done with it yet, but it is a really good book. I'd recommend it to anybody who likes to travel or likes Rome or who likes well-written books by famous authors.
Yay. All right, deal. I have two new books now I have to put on my list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Abby?
I love good escape books. I am completely on board with you. Like whenever I want just something that's wonderful and lovely and I know will not disappoint, like you pick up Jane Austen, the end, mm-hmm. like that is the answer.
Yeah.
So this last weekend I actually read two of the Anne of Green Gables novels. those do it for me as well. Like
love
just
those.
You sit down with Anne, how everything works out for her in the end and you just fall in love all over again. So that's what mm-hmm. I did. And it was a lovely Sunday afternoon.
I love those books.
I have to admit that I've never read them because I've been like, I know these are really happy, so I feel like I'm not going to like them. So I haven't read them because I'm afraid I'll hate them.
You probably will. If you don't like Laura Ingalls Wilder, you're crazy.
I need to find some sad books for you, Ashley. This is my new life goal.
I know. And we never did talk about this, but when I was reading the Divergent series, you and I and Leah were talking about We were talking about the last book and whether or not I would like the big spoiler that happens at the end, because everybody like hates that book and it rips their hearts out. And it ripped my heart out too, but I loved that ending. I was like, that is the ending that book needed. And everybody else was so mad at the author. And I was like, no,
I kind of agree with you on that one. It felt like justified. The ending felt right. So.
Yeah, but you know, escapist books are good too. Like happy books are okay. It's acceptable.
I know. They just make me happy. I don't know why. I think I'm still a kid. I'm like 26 going on 5. So I just have to read kid books all the time to make me happy.
That's great. Well, I think you'll like The Night Circus then, because it's very much like a Lewis Carroll, just this magical wonderland where people get to go play. So yeah, read The Night Circus.
I think I saw the cover at your house, and I'm totally judging it, and I think it looked pretty good, so I think it should be fine.
Then you should read it. I've been telling you about this for a year now. Come on.
I know. I actually just bought a kid's book, Something Circus, but it looks just like the cover of that book, and I was like, oh, I'll probably like this one too then.
Wouldn't that be funny if it was The Night Circus, and you just have it, and you're like, oh, I accidentally bought the book Ashley told me to read.
Is it a kid's book?
Well, it's not like a children's book. I guess it's not really even young adult, is it?
Oh. No.
This was at like a young adult fiction section, or like a kid section. It was like a Barnes & Noble kid area, you know?
Oh, okay. Well, it's not that then.
So funny.
Well, before we go, do you want to tell us where people can find you around on the internet?
Oh my gosh, there's so many places. I have to condense them all. Well, my blog is www.nikkitranphotography.com/blog. And Tron is spelled T-R-A-N, not like Megatron or Tron, whatever the Disney movie. And Nikki is 2 K's. That's my blog. My website for weddings, which I'm kind of not really... You can go there if you want to, but it's just nikkitranphotography.com. I'm on Facebook, so you can just search me on Facebook, Nikki Tron Photography, or The Enchanted Collections is what my Photoshop page is, so you can always find me on there. I have tutorials, all that fun stuff. Instagram is one of my favorite social media places to connect with people. I find so many friends, so you can just find me. I think it's Nikki Tron 1015. I think that's my screen name. It's going to pop up on the list of links, right? Pretty sure something like that.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes.
But yeah, Instagram is the best place.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on and chatting with us about your reverse creative process, Nikki.
Thank you. I'm excited. This is fun.
Yeah, well, thank you. Have a lovely evening.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If there's a guest you'd love to hear from on the podcast, or if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.